So I'm introducing a company that really needs no introduction, GE. Pleasure to have John Dineen, President and CEO of GE HealthCare. In his former life, John, amongst some other things, ran the GE's rail business and did a great job of driving margins higher, gaining share in the U.S., and globalizing that business. I'm sure the plan is to do the same at GE HealthCare. So with that said, John.
Good afternoon. I'm going to take you through the GE HealthCare business. I'll give you a little bit of background on the business first. This is a broad portfolio, probably most known for diagnostic and clinical technologies, MRs, CTs. On the clinical side, ultrasounds, monitoring devices, and then medical diagnostics, which is a life science business, but in diagnostics. IT and solutions, which is global performance solutions, where we work with customers to help optimize hospitals, electronic medical records and PACS, and then life sciences. Now, this life sciences business is biopharmaceutical solutions. We sell the infrastructure to the biopharma companies. So our customers are Amgens, the Genentechs of the world. Our best comparable in this space is Millipore. I bring that up obviously because that's a pretty pure play in this space and gives you an idea of the value of an asset of this kind in the portfolio. What you've got to think about when you look at this portfolio is two things. It's positioned for growth in two ways. One, you've got high growth adjacencies for the developed markets of Europe and the U.S., and that's IT, solutions consulting, life sciences. Life sciences is recombinant technologies, monoclonal antibodies, stem cell therapies. So we've got technologies that are positioned for growth even in the slower developed markets of the world. And then technologies that will perform in the developing markets, which are more traditional medical-based technologies, the CTs, the MRs, and I'll talk a little bit about that. But the portfolio plays well in both developed and developing markets. We have a global footprint in this business, and this gives you a breakdown by Americas, Europe, Middle East, and Asia. And what's important is the footprint is in products, in factories, engineers, and salespeople. So we pretty much in every market have good access to the market and have strong fulfillment capabilities. In the developed markets, as we look forward, we see really moderate growth in traditional equipment markets, high growth in the adjacencies, healthcare IT. You pick up a paper, you hear about the healthcare IT investments that are going to be made in the U.S. and other countries. And then strong services and solutions. The services business, even in the tough economic times of last year, were growing 4%-5%. And they're a big part of our portfolio, and they're predicated on the install base. In the developing markets, we're really in a healthcare build-out. These are great markets for the equipment. And as I said, we're a local player in these markets. One of the things that's important is people understand is that in these developing markets, that we have really unencumbered access in China and India. You're not always competing against a national champion as you might be in other markets. We're also in a high-tech space. These are very high-tech products. We have a high level of integration into the critical components, so in transducers, in X-ray tubes, in displays, in the software itself. So it's like being in the computer business but making the microprocessor and writing the operating systems. So we own a lot of the technology in these products, and we're able to manufacture these products and engineer these products locally. So we've got a very good position in these developing markets around the world. This is a split of the business. What's important is that everybody goes right to the developed market equipment. That's about 30% of the portfolio, developed market being Europe, Japan, and the U.S. U.S. equipment is about 15% of the portfolio. Then you've got the emerging markets at about 15% and growing tremendously. Services and healthcare IT at 35% of the portfolio. And then the biological sciences in the Amersham portfolio is about 20%. What we expect is really steady growth in the life sciences and precision diagnostics. That's the bio side of the business. Consistent service growth in the install base through service, expanding our solutions or consulting capability, and our IT business, which is about a $1.4 billion business. Booming emerging markets. Last year, our businesses were growing high double digit in China and India in a bad market, and that will continue. So really, we feel like the diversity of the portfolio is really helps us deal with even challenging economic times. Now, let's talk a little bit about just recent history, what we've been doing with the business. And we're focused on four things right now. Operational excellence, cash, cost, and regulatory compliance. We've had some regulatory challenges in the past. We've had to beef that up. More and better new product introductions. This, above all, is a product business. And we've been developing more and more new products this year. Big investments in the global footprint, and then changing the culture with healthy imagination. Everybody asks, what is this? Is it a marketing campaign? What does it mean? And I'll talk a little bit about that. Operational excellence, you know, it starts with the basics, which is really focusing on margins and cost. We had a very difficult environment last year, so we went to work on the inside of the business. We restructured the business, took out about 7% of the workforce, $400 million annual savings. We're simplifying the footprint. We really go after rooftops in the business. We've taken out almost 100 rooftops in the business. Really worked on our indirect cost structure, taking out almost $420 million last year. And we're stepping up our sourcing in this business. We're being much more global and much more fast-moving in sourcing. And we picked up some great deflation last year, and we think that'll continue. And then intensify the focus on cash. DSOs, better inventory turns, better cycle times in the business. We know how to do this, and I think the numbers would argue that we're off to a pretty good start here if you look at the CFO improvement that we saw last year. But so really a stronger focus on margins and cash, and there's more of this out there, more that we can do in the business from this standpoint. I said it's a product business. While we're taking cost out, we are reinvesting a lot of that into new NPIs. We're adding engineers around the world, so we think we have a pretty productive and local base of engineers. And you know, in my business, I have 1,200 engineers in India, 800 engineers in China. They're focused on coming up with products that are right for those markets. So we are very indigenous from an engineering and manufacturing standpoint. And this year, you've seen product launches in areas like the in-cell analyzers, which is for cellular research to support the stem cell industry. The V-scan, which I usually have with me, is a very small ultrasound unit. ActAdvant, we've improved our position in MR and CT, as well as launched products in molecular diagnostics like Hexvix. So really a much stronger portfolio, and we feel like this is going to continue going forward. Globalizing the business. China, India, developing markets are a great opportunity for us. We took a couple steps last year. We reorganized the business, and basically every country leader reports directly to the CEO. We're investing in product. You have to have unique products. You can't just take a product from the U.S. or Europe and sell that in China. So our engineers in China are launching new Brevo CTs, Brevo MRs, products that have the right cost structure and the right feature set to be winners in these markets. Same thing for India. Product is not enough. Once we've got the right product, we have to make large investments in distribution. So we're adding over 1,000 sales resources. And we've always had a pretty good local supply chain capability. We've got over 10 factories producing locally in China and India. So it's really being in country, for country, in these booming healthcare markets. Our share expectations and our margin expectations are the same here as they are in the rest of the markets. If you get the product right and you locally fulfill, this does not represent growth at the expense of margin rates, and that's how it's proving out in our business. When you look at the contribution margin rates of our developing market equipment businesses versus the developed market, there's only a point or two difference. So you know, everybody comes to you and says, great, you're going to get growth, but you're going to mix your business down. The facts don't support that argument. And if it is, it means we haven't gotten the product right. And really, by spending the time and the energy on engineering the product, we think we can take full advantage of this growth and doing it at the same attractive margins that we've experienced in the business in other markets around the world. So a big question that usually comes up, and I think you should know, it's not something that really represents a mix down in my view. Healthy imagination. A lot of people have heard about healthy imagination, something that we launched last year, and they say, what is it? Is it just a marketing campaign? Healthy imagination is a very important change for our business. It's really a change in the way we think about healthcare. It's first an acknowledgment that healthcare systems around the world are very challenged right now. Almost all healthcare systems are struggling with cost, quality, access, or some combination of the above. Many of them are public systems, either directly or indirectly financed by governments, and you all know the situation that governments around the world are in. But they all are trying to expand access and improve service because it is a hot potato from a political standpoint. No incumbent government really wants to fall backwards from a healthcare standpoint. So healthcare systems are really struggling with the productivity equation. How do we offer more for less? In the past, as a supplier to the healthcare industry, you really could run the business on a technology for the sake of technology basis. Just take the technology to the next level. Double the slices, improve the picture, better diagnostic quality, and the customers will come. We also thought that if you shot at the high end, you could eventually allow that technology to trickle down over time to the low end, and your portfolio will build itself out. That's not the way it works. We've got to do a couple things. One, we've got to look at our portfolio and say we want to be more than an equipment manufacturer. We want to be in IT. We want to be in the biological space. We want to be in life sciences. We want to have a service and solutions business that helps our customers address their cost and quality challenges. So we've diversified the portfolio. The other thing we're doing is investing in products at all price points. So, you need products at the highest end. You also need to be delivering new technologies at the medium end and at the low end of the product line. Should have had this out, but this is a prop that I should show you as a V-scan. This is an ultrasound unit. Okay, that should sell for under $10,000. It was just released by the business. The average price of an ultrasound in early 2000 was about $90,000 in our business. The price of an ultrasound today, the average price of an ultrasound is about $50,000, $60,000 in the business. People always ask me, is healthy imagination going to mix your business down? Is it going to impact your profitability? Well, we have to completely re-engineer products to get them to this price point, first of all. We have to use different technologies to get to these capabilities. The ultrasound business, over that same time, while those price points dropped, tripled in its size. GE became the leader around the world in ultrasound, and the average contribution margin percentage of that business increased 10 points as we went from huge desktop ultrasound systems to technologies like this. So this is really a poster child for what healthy imagination means to us. It's us really taking our best technology to deliver products at better price points that allow these technologies to be used in a more ubiquitous fashion in lower cost settings. Hopefully this can be used in a primary care setting in the United States. It could be used in the field in India or China. That's what healthy imagination means. So it really is us acknowledging that the healthcare system has changed and that we have to change our orientation in terms of how we focus our R&D dollars, what we focus on, so that we can help be part of what is a real challenging problem in some countries. If you're in China, they're trying to build out their healthcare system. If they're in the U.S., they're adding more people, but trying to do that without adding too much cost to the healthcare system, which is already a pretty expensive healthcare system. So we're really starting to reorient the business to make sure that our products have better clinical and economic value propositions. And that's a different orientation in healthcare. Maybe not in other industries, but in healthcare, that's a very different orientation. And that is how we are running GE Healthcare. We're thinking very differently about the way we introduce technologies. So when you take all the recent stuff, you take the cost, you take the NPI focus, you take slightly better markets, we're feeling a little bit better about the business. This is still a short cycle business, still volatile month to month, quarter to quarter. But we've gone from an environment where orders were continuing to decline year over year to where we've seen some pretty consistent improvement, and that we feel good, better about the markets. We're still seeing moderate recovery in some of the developed markets. The developing markets continue to do very, very well. And we feel like we've got a better portfolio and that we can perform better in those markets and obviously do that with better cash and cost performance. So far, so good. Now I'll give you a look ahead and talk a little bit about how we see the healthcare market shaping up and what we're doing to approach that market. The first thing is that demand drivers remain strong despite economic pressure. People say, hey, listen, you've got healthcare reform in the U.S., you've got the global recession. What's going to happen from a healthcare standpoint? So what I'll show you is that you got to stand back and look at what's happening from a disease, from a patient standpoint. You got to understand the true focus of demand in this market. The other thing that's interesting is that diagnostics was really the realm of electronics over the past 20 years. And in pharma, small molecules or chemistry was dominant. What we're seeing is biology is taking a much more prominent place on the healthcare stage, both from a diagnostic standpoint with molecular diagnostics and from a treatment standpoint. A lot of the cutting-edge pharmaceuticals in oncology or neurology now are biopharmaceuticals, monoclonal antibody-based or recombinant-based technologies, and we play a big role there. Payers and providers want clinical quality and efficiency. IT is going to be very important. Healthcare suffers from more variation than any industry I have ever seen. And we all know as industrialists that variation drives cost and quality problems. Investments in IT are going to be central to re-engineering healthcare systems around the world and removing some of that chronic variance from the healthcare systems. We also think that hospitals, our partners, are going to need help in terms of dealing with some of the challenges associated with lower reimbursement levels and more patients. They're going to have tighter margins. They're going to have more patients to serve. They're going to have to get more efficient, and we think we're in a good position with our service business to expand our model and offer them some more help there. And then we see care is going to be moving outside of hospitals. Hospitals are, if you've ever gotten a hospital bill, hospitals are high-cost settings and really should be the capacity used for the most serious of illnesses and the sickest of patients. You're going to see technology move into the clinics and into the home environment. We're investing for that. So, we think these are the real trends in healthcare, and we think we're aiming in front of the bird here from an investment standpoint. We're making massive investments that correspond to these changes in the healthcare industry. Now, tons of questions about healthcare reform and the U.S. market. The first thing I got to tell you is U.S. equipment market is about 15 to 20% of my portfolio, depending on the year. Okay, so the first thing I tell everybody to do is step back a little bit and start with the patients. And there's some interesting things you're going to see out there, which is the demographics of health are scary. Chronic diseases are exploding around the world. This is not just a developed market phenomenon, but diabetes is exploding in India, cancer is exploding in India, in China, and in the U.S. So people are getting very sick. Obesity is exploding in the U.S., in India, and in China. And people are getting older. And it's an established fact that at end of life, people are spending more money on health care. So if you look at the demographics, it screams more patients. So healthcare systems are going to see an influx of patients. And you really have to start there. All policy aside, any of the health demographics would make you feel a little bit better about the healthcare industry in terms of the sheer volume that is facing it. The other thing that's going on is the developed markets around the world. Healthcare is becoming, top three on the list from an investment standpoint. So if you look at China's new five-year plan, there's a massive build-out, $123 billion being spent. You talk about stimulus. China knows how to allocate infrastructure stimulus, and they spend it faster than anyone. They really do put their money where their mouth is. When they decide on a program, they roll out. And that's what we're seeing. We're in the middle of a tremendous infrastructure build-out in China. The same thing's happening in India. It's more of a consumer market, but we're seeing rapid growth there. 16% of the world's population, 20% of the world's disease. Government and personal spending is rising at a significant rate in that country. And then you get to the U.S. And people say, what's the impact of healthcare reform on your business? And you got to think about a couple of factors here. The two biggest ones are tax and volume. So in a business like ours, we're going to see about $50 million after tax of tax impact related to the device taxes for healthcare reform. We're also going to see an influx of patients. And it's hard to get your handle on whether or not that how significant that influx of patients is going to be. But if you look at Massachusetts, which has really made some of these changes, very similar changes a few years ago, we're seeing a tremendous influx of patients. And that could be positive to 2x the impact of what we're seeing in the taxes. So we really say a push is probably the worst-case scenario here. You're also seeing stimulus and a lot of investment in productivity tools. So we think as net-net, this is going to be a very good thing for healthcare IT, and you are seeing stimulus dollars there. And we think it's going to open up a real opportunity for our service and solutions business. So I think, again, you start back, you got to look at the demographics of health, and you realize that there's some real growth opportunities here. You see a huge build-out going on in Asia, and healthcare reform, it's got some obvious negatives, associated with the direct taxes, but there's some real volume implications for the business here. The other thing you're going to see around the world, though, is you are going to see reimbursement pressures. Governments are going to struggle with how much they're spending, and we think healthy imagination is the right response to that. We think engineering more productive technologies at better price points is the right response to what could be future reimbursement challenges. So we're positioning the portfolio to deal with any potential downsides to this. The other thing that we're doing is investing in a very big way in biology. And I get excited about this stuff, so I'm going to try not to dive too far into it. But we play basically in the diagnostic area and in the therapy area. I'll start over on the right-hand side with our life sciences business. In life sciences, we indirectly participate in the therapy side of biopharma. What do I mean by that? Well, be it recombinant technology, be it monoclonal antibody technology, or be it stem cell technology, there are factories that make these biopharmaceuticals. We build the tools that go into those factories, into creating those cell cultures, separating those cell cultures. So we invest in the technologies that really facilitate both of these industries. And we've invested, we've done, the business has done very well in the recombinant space as monoclonal antibody therapy. Some of the newer therapies that are coming out of companies like Amgen now take off. We're seeing some tremendous growth with the infrastructure we've built to support that, both in the lab and in the factory. And we're investing very heavily right now in doing the same thing, which is creating the equipment and technology that's going to support the stem cell industry. And that is really poised for a takeoff over the next decade, both from a testing standpoint and from a therapeutic standpoint. So we play in the advanced therapeutic space here. Over on the left-hand side, diagnostics is shifting to biology as well. And what we're doing here is developing very unique tracers for neurological disorders and for oncology and cardiac applications. How do these work? These are very specific tracers, so they will have a ligand that is attracted to a protein. In this case, let's say for Alzheimer's, it's an amyloid plaque. That amyloid plaque is in your brain. You inject this into a body. This thing seeks out amyloid plaque, binds to it, and it has a light on the end of it. It's got a radio tracer. So we take a gamma camera, we can see an image, we can recognize an amyloid plaque. That's important for two reasons. One is you can detect these diseases much earlier, and two, you can make sure that the treatment is working. Many of the treatments in oncology and neurology are going to be very expensive treatments. In many cases, there's a lot of heterogeneity in these diseases. In cancers, for example, there are lots of different colon cancers, lots of different prostate cancers. You've got to understand whether or not that $10,000 a month therapy is addressing that the specific type of colon cancer. If we can identify that with a precision diagnostic, we can determine who will actually respond to the drug and who will not respond to the drug before it is actually administered. So they're expensive diagnostics, but when they're combined with the entire therapeutic process and you look at them from a population standpoint, they can save a tremendous amount of money by pinpointing the people in that population that will respond to that drug. So you're going to see a real convergence between molecular diagnostics and some of the advanced treatments coming out of biopharma in the future, and we are a very big player in this space. So, and we feel good about this because we really think that biological sciences is going to take center stage when it comes to diagnostics and therapy in the future. We're well positioned. Improving healthcare efficiency and quality. The healthcare system, regardless of where you are around the world, they are, we've said this before, not exactly well-oiled machines from an efficiency standpoint or from a quality standpoint. They typically suffer from a great deal of variance, and there's not a lot of process technology in healthcare. When you look at how IT is used here versus how it's used in my industry or in your industry, there's a real opportunity for deployment. That's recognized worldwide, and there is a huge focus on digitizing healthcare. We have a very strong position in traditional EMRs, but we're taking a huge swing with something called Quilibria, which is clinical decision support. And we're working with Intermountain on a clinical decision support system. And simply put, what it will do is assist the physician who's doing a procedure, removing a ventilator, somebody from a ventilator. Real time will give that physician what the standard of care is. The best process in the world for doing that will be presented to the physician at bedside. So this system actually houses these world-class, what they call protocols, and then delivers that protocol to the physician to make sure that the physician is using sort of the best-in-class process. And that allows us to remove variance from healthcare. So huge investment here with a great partner who's really famous for applying Six Sigma methodology to healthcare. That's Intermountain. Over on the solution side of the business, this is really taking our service business to another level and providing IT solutions and consulting to help improve their processes, industrialize these processes. These are things like asset tracking, helping them know where all the assets are, the X-ray systems, the infusion pumps around the hospital. Let them understand what their utilization rates are so that they can improve their asset utilization rates. Scheduling algorithms that allow them to schedule unique assets like critical intensive care beds or surgical theaters. So we're bringing a great deal of technology to the processes in the healthcare institutions, and we really think, given the financial challenges, that this is going to be a great spot. And then it's simply moving care out of hospitals and providing technologies like the Vscan I showed you that can be used in different settings. So, allowing more procedures to be done in primary care offices, and ultimately, particularly with the burden of chronic diseases, to be able to treat chronic care patients in a home setting. And that's going to take a combination of new and simple devices and distributed IT technology that allows hospitals and physicians to monitor the status of a chronic care patient in his or her own home. And we're stepping into this in a very big way with another fairly sophisticated partner, Intel. The two of us are making a big commitment to this business. This is still, this is 4, 5, 6 years out before this type of industry really, really takes off. But what you'll see is a commitment to not just today's healthcare system, but what we think are going to be obviously the future trends in healthcare. So that's a business. We feel very good about our position, what we've done over the past couple of years, where we are now, and where we are investing. We think we've got our head screwed on correctly in terms of how we look at the market. We think we've got a great balance in terms of our short-term product positions and the investments that we're making to be a leader in the long term. So when you look across the business, we see today better products at every price point, big emerging markets that we have real access to. Broader IT and services portfolios, advanced diagnostics and therapies, we're playing a very strong role, as I showed you there. We're building out life sciences, healthcare IT, and home health adjacencies. And then when it comes to the fundamentals of of running the business, working the margins and the cash performance. So with that, I will end the presentation and take any questions that you might have.
Correct a misconception I may have. When you go into the hospital right now and you're working with them in advisory capacity and optimization capacity, are you charging them some money to actually do the consulting advisory? And if you can sell through, sell through, or is it that comes with selling product?
Yeah,
and could that change evolve?
No, you're charging money. The model that we're really focusing on when it comes to solutions is not just simple consulting or advisory. But we typically take a kernel of IT technology, like scheduling algorithms, and we wrap that in consulting capabilities. So we'll help them install that scheduling system, then to recognize, in DMAIC terms or Six Sigma terms, to understand what using that data, what the issues are, and then to do change management consulting with the customer. So typically it involves using real IT technology, but also change management and process consulting. And that's a business model. So it's not something that we give away or something that we do as a part of an equipment transaction. What I will tell you, though, is where we do these things and we establish these partnerships, it really actually helps our equipment businesses. Our penetration rates tend to be much higher. So the reverse of the premise is what is true, which is instead of this, equipment sort of pulling along this, or this being part of an equipment deal, we tend to end up with better equipment businesses because of the relationships we form here. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Right now, if you're going to sell me a million-dollar piece of equipment, I'm running a hospital, you're going to install it, you're going to show me how to use it.
Yeah.
So basically, it's all wrapped up. It's bundled effectively.
Yes.
Is there a model, or can there be a model, and have you thought about a model where part of it is you go and you talk to a hospital and say, "Hello, this is ops engineering. This is what you can do," and charge for that? Could that be something in the future?
Yeah, absolutely.
But not today, but it's something you...
Well, we do that, but to a much lesser extent. Usually, it's a technology provided with a service.
Thank you.
Question on healthcare reform and your hospital customers. So a big thing holding back their profitability has been bad debt expense.
Yeah.
And theoretically, the big chunk of that or all of it's going to go away. Is that something that they're talking about as maybe a source where this could be a big benefit, where their profits, get a lot more robust with this, or what are you hearing from them?
Yeah, on that variable, not a lot. It's theoretically something that could improve, but they wouldn't usually doesn't come up as one of the top benefits for this. It really depends on the demographics of that hospital's patient population, and that varies wildly from one side of the city to another.
John, again, below the clock here, but I'll just throw one in if I can. Obviously, life sciences going forward is very, very important.
Yeah.
I think Jeff kind of ruled out, a large acquisition in life sciences, but is the opportunity so compelling that doing a larger deal at a higher multiple is worth a bit of short-term pain for long-term gain?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And the first thing you have to understand is it's a very, very highly fragmented industry. So there aren't that many large deals. There are a lot of smaller players in this business. So it's a great place, highly fragmented, a lot of smaller players, and so I think we're going to be looking for opportunities, but they're not going to be enormous bites at the apple. But it is a place that we want to continue to invest. We love the asset, we love the space, we think it's a great GE business.
Great.
Yeah.
Thanks, sir. Great.
Thank you very much.